Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. It's Spiegs and Lawrence Holmes right here. And that song right there is I'm the Man Who Loves You by Wilco from the album Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. And if anybody ever asks me, Greg Kot, about my 9 years as a producer for you and Jim DeRogatis on Sound Opinions, the first thing I always think of is the week after 9/11, and Wilco was in the middle of dealing with that album and what had gone on with their record label, and they came in to the XRT Studios, the old building on Belmont, Lawrence, that we used to share.
We both spent our time back in Studio C cutting up opens back in the day.
Yes, and this was in Studio B, where somehow bands were crammed in there, and the recently retired Mark Nielsen made them sound great. Mm-hmm. And there was Wilco and Jeff Tweedy playing that song. Wilco playing that song and, you know, getting to stand on the other side of the glass and watch that happen. I get chills even just thinking about it. That was about as powerful a live. That's the most powerful live performance that I've ever a part of in my 9 years with the show. You've had how many years now, Greg, Sound Opinions?
Since 99. We've been on the air fairly continuously between XRT, and then we went over to BEZ Public Radio in 2005, and we're now nationally syndicated on a couple hundred stations. So
that's pretty. I think it's a couple hundred. I didn't realize that.
That's outstanding.
Soundopinions.org is the website, the world's only rock and roll talk show, and it's a really good show. I listen. I still listen a lot.
Thank you, man. I think about that show a lot, too, and I mean, that was fortunately, there was a four-piece Wilco. Yeah. At the time, you know, the smallest the band has ever been, really, in the wake of some band moves that were very controversial at the time. Mm-hmm. Jay Bennett leaving the band.
Yeah, you wrote a book about that.
I did, but that was in a very emotional, you know, one of the most emotional weeks of anybody's life, right? The post 9/11 thing, everybody was just in shock.
Yeah,
and that performance really was necessary. You know, it was just one of those things you felt like this is. We needed this, you know? It was a very powerful moment all around, I thought.
I still remember Jeff Tweedy saying, something strange has happened to our album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, some of the songs, all of a sudden, like, Ashes of American Flags.
Yeah, oh, God. Yeah, tall Buildings Fall, all these kind of, like, little references in the lyrics. You're just going, what is going on?
How is that stuff tied in?
And he was talking about the record as an attack on spirit. He was talking about 9/11 in the context of an attack on the American spirit, and he said the theme of the record in a lot of ways was what's happening to America, the spirit of America, what is America, you know, kind of, and he's never like in a finger-pointing mode in his lyrics. They're very oblique and elliptical, but as you're reading these shards of lyrics and the way the songs are delivered, songs like A War on War, you know, things like that, these little messages would pop through. And it was pretty powerful stuff at that time.
Powerful stuff. Lawrence Holmes, I have watched San Francisco Giants playoff games with Greg Kot over a few beverages. Hardcore baseball fan is Greg Kot.
Is that right?
I love baseball, yeah.
Did you grow up out in the Bay?
No, I didn't. You know, I'm trying to make this as short as I can. My father, all my family emigrated from Europe after World War II. My dad was the first one over here. He was 20 years old in 1951. He went to college, Manhattan College, which was in the Bronx. In New York. And basically the Polo Grounds, where the New York Giants played at the time, was right there. So my dad's rookie year in America and Willie Mays' rookie year in baseball.
I love the way you say that.
And I grew up, one of my first memories as a kid was growing up with a Willie Mays poster on my wall. So I one of the first lessons my dad taught me, don't let anyone tell you that Babe Ruth was the greatest baseball player of all time. This is the greatest baseball player of all time. And he would point to Willie Mays poster. And we would have long discussions about why he felt that. And I just became a hardcore Giants fan with him ever since that day.
Spending so much time in your career in Chicago, was last year weird for you?
Yeah, it was really weird.
Cubs, Giants.
Yeah, it was talk about conflicted emotions. I so wanted the Cubs to win a World Series, but at the expense of the Giants, it would be like, oh my God, you know, where am I going here? And it was fitting that they had that amazing comeback in the ninth inning to crush the Giants' hopes and go on from there to win the series.
It's funny, in the book, The Cubs Way, I don't know if you've read it yet, by Tom Verducci, Madden's in there, and he's pretty honest about the fact that they wanted no part of a Game 5.
Yeah. Terrified of Johnny Cueto.
Absolutely.
And Bumgarner coming out of the bullpen as sort of a Kansas City Royals World Series scenario 2 years earlier, where Bumgarner pitched those last five innings on two days rest, I think. Which was an incredible feat. And they expected him to do that again.
Will you keep him off the dirt bike now?
Oh, my God. You know, I told somebody, I said, the season's over. And they said, no, don't. How can you give up on the season so fast? No, trust me. The season's over. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, you're toast. There's a lot of commonalities between the music world and the sports world. And as a guy who's straddled both of them my entire life, you know, my mom was an opera singer and dad was a sports writer when he was young. And my older brother was a musician, and my other older brother is a center fielder. And like, I've always been both, and I still get to do both, which is fun. But Greg, you and I did a talk a few years back about some of the commonalities, and Lawrence, I know you can relate to this stuff, like hipster sports fans and hipster rock fans. Like, oh no, I was a fan of the Blackhawks before they got popular.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, I was into Husker Du before X happened, or I was into Wilco before they, whatever it is. Like, there's a lot of commonalities in that way. People think of them as different worlds, but for the experience as a fan, I think there's a lot of commonalities, don't
well,
you?
Well, there's a geek factor in both. There's
right?
no doubt about it. The other thing that a lot of people find odd is that, you know, how do music and sports, because the jock culture, the jocks continually picked on supposedly the nerdy guys who were into music, you know, so you formed a band to get back at the jocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kurt Cobain's big thing was, you know, those guys were jerks to me, you know, being in a band and getting a girlfriend was my best revenge, you know, against the jocks who beat up on me in high school. So there's that sort of duality. But I think there's a lot more intersection than people realize. I talk to music fans all the time, and we end up talking about sports. And I talk to guys in bands a lot, and we end up talking about basketball for 20 minutes. I go, how did that happen? You know, it's kind of like, you know, there's these mutual interests that come up all the time. And I think I do think of sports as an art form, you know, when it's well played. I love sports. I love watching baseball. It can be anybody, because there's an artistic aspect to it that I really appreciate, and I think I think that's the commonality with music.
I'm so interested in that type of, well, this is mine and you're an interloper, because it translates to a lot of different things: sports, music. I'm a comic book geek, so
yeah.
it's there too, because you learn. And I don't know if music fans learn this when they go to festivals, but I can tell you, I can assure you that, as a comic book consumer, going to C2E2 is way too much for me. Learning that my level of geek is not even close.
Have you been to a Cubs convention?
Oh, God.
Well, yeah.
Or anything like that. And the level, and no matter how much you might love a team or a sport, you go to a convention and you see people geeking out in that way. It's like, oh, my God, it is religion. As it can be for a comic book convention.
Or music, where when you go to concerts and you hear people that'll tell you, oh, well, I remember listening to this band when they were playing at the Beat Kitchen, you know, before anyone even discovered them. Like, that sort of thing is always fascinating, how we all want to be the person that has that to themselves.
You own it. It's your proprietary stuff. Like, that's my team, or that's my band.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, you own it. It's just like the way you memorized Manny Sanguian's batting average in 1977. You know that the B-side of the first, you know, Franz Ferdinand single was this, and this weird character that showed up only in, you know, episode 3 of this comic book series.
Yes!
And then came back in episode 100, you know. Who else would study that kind of stuff to that extent, except somebody who's really invested in little pieces of art and culture.
Yeah, you know? You're geeking out. And like, you know, one of the things that I've always ended up battling for on this radio station is chemistry on a team, right? And like the power of not necessarily getting along, but respecting each other and wanting to perform well for each other. And I draw that corollary to a band all the time.
Well,
and
you have the experience of it, knowing what it's like in multiple bands, right?
Yes, yes. Absolutely. In bands where it's been good and bands where it's been bad, you know, and when certain people bring their selfishness into it, you know, like I definitely have that experience. But like that experience of getting to a rehearsal and knowing I better know my stuff.
Yeah.
I am not, that guy worked his ass off, and I am not going to screw up the bridge and waste his time because he's got two kids and he's been doing X and Y. Like, on a good team of really any kind, that desire to show up for your teammates is a huge part of it.
That's a big part. That's a great analogy because that is, to me, I mean, the culture of bands is so interesting to me. How a group of people are able to stick together for any length of time and create something beautiful in that time and not destroy each other in the process.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the culture of a team, if it's going to achieve anything, has got to be the same thing. It's a very delicate chemistry. And sometimes just removing one person from that can destroy the whole balance of the thing. It's like a house of cards. It comes tumbling down. But it's really fascinating.
So who's the musical equivalent of removing David Ross and Dexter Fowler from the Cubs?
I think it's Spiegs, right? Look, it's one of those things that we don't have an opportunity to quantify. And I think that it's real. I don't know what to call it, but the subtraction that happened inside the Cubs clubhouse, it's hard for me to look past it and say it had no effect on what's going on.
Well, the bosses don't. Remember, the bosses will bring up, these are human beings. These are human beings. All the time they'll bring it up because it's real. And when it changes, somebody's got to step forward and kind of help readjust the way that people get along with each other and function with each
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely. How you feel about yourself is so important to performance. Like, I would say, you know, the David Ross analogy, I'm thinking of, like, the first thing that popped into my head was REM when they lost Bill Berry.
Oh, see, that's amazing.
And nobody thinks about Bill Berry, but I think that was such a key
That's their original drummer and first drummer.
And big songwriter.
Oh, I didn't realize how
big
of a songwriter.
Wrote a ton of songs for them.
REM post-Bill Berry was...
a good band, but not a great band ever again. You know?
I see, look at that. I could do that all day. Bill Berry and David Ross.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I know you've written the book with Mavis Staples, and Terry Himmert is a huge Mavis Staples fan too. So she actually introduced me once. What is it about her that's so magical? Because it seems like she draws people in.
I've never met any person like her. I can honestly say that. I've met hundreds of musicians and spent time with hundreds of musicians. There is no one like her. I mean, I'd even widen that out. Forget about musicians, just human beings.
This is Mavis
I've never
Staples.
Met another person like her.
How old was Mavis when the Staples Singers were doing I'll Take You There and stuff like that?
She was probably in her early 30s at that point. Wow. You know, she was born in 1939. So, yeah, she was probably well into her 30s at that point. You know, they were kind of, you should be sort of past your prime. They had their moment in the 60s. They never quite hit. They were huge on the gospel circuit. They tried to transition over into the pop realm. Finally, they got it going at Stax Records, and they actually went to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, to record it with that great rhythm section. David Hood, the bass player, is the father of Patterson Hood, the lead singer of Drive-By Truckers.
I didn't realize that.
And that is one of the greatest rhythm sections of all time. They recorded with the Stones. They recorded with Wilson Pickett, Aretha. Everybody wanted to record with them. But when the Staples, they rave about the Staples. You know, they recorded the frickin' Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
They go, the best group, the best chemistry we ever had with any group ever in the studio was with the Staples. And they go, Mavis wasn't just a friend. She was a hugger. She made everybody feel at home. The warmth that she projected made everybody feel better about what they were, that they got up that day. And they were having this experience together.
No coincidence. Bob Dylan wanted to marry her. That's my favorite story that she tells. Like, Bob Dylan went up to Pop Staples and said, Pops, I want to marry Mavis. And Pop said, don't ask me, ask Mavis.
Yeah.
Tweety told me a story once when he was on tour with Dylan, and Tweety had produced a couple of Mavis records, and he said to Dylan, he said he was trying to make some kind of connection with Dylan, you know, so he's like, hey, Bob, Mavis says hi. And he turns around and says, tell her she should have married me.
There it is.
Still out there, man.
This segment on the score is brought to you by Volvo. Get up to $4,500 on a new Volvo vehicle of your choosing during Volvo's midsummer sales event. Visit your local Volvo dealer for details on this limited time offer. Another commonality strikes me in the two worlds as I'm sitting here thinking about it. Lawrence, you and I talk a lot about cord cutting in regards to sports, in regards to, like, you know, I should be able to sit in my cubicle anywhere and watch a game from the league that I want to watch. I should be able to do that. And, you know, a lot of times they're cutting out that middle person of the cable entity. Greg, you wrote a book about Radiohead, right? And how
they were part of the book. Yeah,
they were part of the book. You wrote a book about this issue, though, about subverting the big record labels and subverting the system and offering your music directly to the people,
right?
And just, you know, cutting out as much as you can between artist and person. So how's the music business doing in that regard? Because the sports business, we follow that every day.
Well, that book Ripped came out in like 2009. And at the time, it was like the first 10 years of this. And one of the things I try to get across in that book is that this is just the very beginning of this. We don't know where this is going to go. But it was a huge thing. And it was interesting because of all the intellectual property areas, music was the first in. It was like the guinea pig. And people were going, is this going to happen to us too? Mm-hmm. Like the... You know, I had meetings at the newspaper, the Tribune, like, what does this mean for print journalism? I go, this means that we're going to have to readjust our business model in a few years. And, you know, movies and everything is being affected. Now TV and movies are getting hit really hard by this area. So it's huge. And it is forcing people to rethink the middleman concept. But what's happening in music right now, I think, is starting to happen in these other areas as well. A new middleman appeared. Instead of Sony Record Company, it is now Google. It's now Spotify. So these middlemen are popping up again. And once again, the money is being funneled through them. And you wonder, the people who are actually creating the art, they're still not getting paid, you know? Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I believe I heard that line in a song once. Mm-hmm. And it's the same scenario in music. And I think you guys could speak to it much more eloquently than I could. In your area.
Well, the sports, you got the league is really the keeper of it. So I guess the corollary would be what, Lawrence? And in boxing now is pay-per-view, and you try to get as much money directly to the boxer as you can.
Is the way that things have been sold, and I know we talked about it a little bit. I heard you and Parkins discussing it, the conversation that we had, where the NFL has sold Thursday Night Football four ways.
Oh, that is amazing. To like remind people of that, that is amazing.
Thursday Night Football, which to me is the NFL's worst property, has now been sold four ways. It's been split between NBC and CBS. They split their games. On top of that, they have a deal with Verizon customers that can watch it for free on Verizon. Amazon is now the exclusive streaming service of Thursday Night Football. And of course, they carry it on their own network. And let me just tell you, executives in other sports are amazed at this. Amazed at the fact that the NFL has been able to take what is their worst
Their worst product.
Their worst thing and sell it four ways.
On four different platforms and give each one of those people they sold it to the feeling of exclusivity.
Right, when it's clearly not exclusive. Mm-hmm. And they keep tinkering with it.
And that is taking advantage of the marketplace as it changes.
I think that they're the best at it. And the old McNeil line, gangsters in suits.
Gangsters in Armani suits.
That's what they are. They seem to be ahead of it. And I think that they'll probably feel it the least when there's the, imminent backlash from actual stations and networks to say, we're not going to pay crazy rights fees anymore. If you can find $8 billion somewhere else, God bless you, but we're not going to do that. But I think we're still a little ways away from that.
Well, it's interesting because you got Jay-Z who just went platinum with an album via Tidal.
And on that album, he is talking about what Greg's talking about. Mm-hmm. He's basically talking to rappers about them signing 360 deals that they don't need to be signing, and trying to explain to them that they need, using Prince as an example a couple times throughout the album, of saying you don't have to do it this way. Why are you still taking advances? You know, stuff like that, where he says trying to give them $1 million worth of game for 99 cents.
Yeah. No, he's, you know, Jay-Z for, you know, I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman. You know, and that was – that was it from 20 years ago. He's still the same way. It's interesting that Prince, the late, great Prince, got a lot of stick for not being a great businessman. But I think he was brilliant. He was a visionary. He was one of the guys I wrote about extensively in Ripped, as a visionary in terms of taking his music and giving it, licensing it. Like, he would still own the rights to it, but he would, you know, okay, you can distribute this record for me. I'll form a partnership with you for this one thing, and I'll form another partnership with you for this other thing. But the key to all that is, first, people got to want what you're putting out. It has to be an in-demand thing. Like, you can't just make something and expect to license your thing all over the place. Like the NFL, mm-hmm. people want the NFL. At least for now. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to last for another 10 years.
But they still want it. We do.
They still want it.
Still want it.
Big time.
Still paying for it.
Still the number one show on television. Sunday Night Football. Yeah. And it's not close.
And they can put on any teams on there, right?
Yep.
It doesn't matter who plays.
What's the corollary to Thursday Night Football being sold four times? So what's the worst record you could sell four different times?
I don't know if there is one like that.
This segment is brought to you by Volvo. Get up to $4,500 on a new Volvo vehicle of your choosing during Volvo's midsummer sales event. Visit your local Volvo dealer for details on this limited time offer. It's the Spiegel and Parkins Show. Spiegs and Lawrence Holmes here with you. Top of the hour, we'll talk to Kelly Kroll from Comcast Sportsnet about the Home Run Derby last night. We'll talk some All-Star game for later tonight, but a couple more sports and music corollaries, including one that has to do with Carlos Boozer. That's next on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. Spiegel and Parkins Show with Lawrence Holmes today. Talking some music and some sports all mixed in together with our friend Greg Kot, the rock critic for the Chicago Tribune, co-host of Sound Opinions, the world's only rock and roll talk show, and some of the music and sports corollaries. And I mentioned Carlos Boozer, because Boozer most famous in this town for what, Lawrence? What is Boozer most famous for, essentially?
Get that, Joe!
And one! Give me that! Yeah! Come on, Joe! Come on, man! Yeah, and one.
I'm proud of my Carlos Boozer impression. Always have been.
I truly believe that you only made this comp so that you can do the Carlos Boozer impersonation.
Let me ask you to think about the Cypress Hill debut album. Okay,
Be Real.
Yeah,
and Send Dog.
And pick any song. How about
We're Going Out?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I want to get high. It's like hits from the bong.
Hits from the bong.
A to the mother effing king, homeboy. A to the mother.
A to the king.
Imagine Carlos Boozer in the background going,
A to the king. And one. Give me that.
It's so true. Right?
So true.
It's Carlos Boozer as the hype man.
Yeah. No kidding.
You know?
That's awesome.
Right? And so like ML Carr was the hype man for the Celtics. So he's swinging the towel.
Yeah,
right? And a lot of like rap groups. And
he's the Cornbread Maxwell of Cypress Hill.
That's what I'm saying. I cannot tell.
It's from the ball.
And once I made that comp, I got lost in it forever in my life.
God.
So there's a... There's a lot of stuff that goes on. How about a perfect set list for a band?
Perfect set list.
And a perfect could be a lineup in baseball, or it's really like I guess what I'm saying is a perfect rock show experience with its highs and lows and the emotional and visceral satisfaction of that. Like being at a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's rare that a game can offer you something that perfect. It obviously has to end in a win for the home team, and you don't even know about that. But the drama and the highs and lows of like a 2.5, 3 hour journey of a game, like a 2.5, 3 hour journey of a show.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that one with me at all? Or is that a miss?
I get you. You know, and it seems like you can orchestrate a show a little bit better than you can a game, right? The element of spontaneity is much greater in a sporting event. But there are games that sort of do have that sort of arc of up and down and roller coaster, changing the leads. And at the end, there's a dramatic finish that you know, just blows your mind.
Right.
And there can be shows like that. You know, like the most spontaneous rock shows are like that. Like I'll never forget Neil Young playing in a frickin' thunderstorm you know, at that god-awful venue in Tinley Park.
Oh, it's the worst place.
But it was like flooding in the aisles, and the wind was coming in, the rain was coming in sideways, and it was thunder and lightning, and the electricity went out.
Hmm.
And Neil and Crazy Horse are playing their butts off up there. Even with the sound off, they are still rocking out. They didn't care if no one could hear them. You could still see they were performing. And everybody was ready to panic and leave the part. You know, they were just going to scramble for cover. And they go, no, Neil's still rocking. We're staying. You know, and he sort of like rallied the troops. Like everybody was cool, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry. So that was a kind of a moment that reminded me of a game could happen.
Pearl Jam at Wrigley a few years ago.
And that was another great
right?
example.
They waited out the rain for what? Like 2.5, 3 hours? And even after all that wait, Ernie Banks was still there. Right? They brought out Ernie Banks at like 11 o'clock at night. They hadn't even played yet, I think.
I'm trying to think if Ernie came out after the break, long break, or right. I think he came out. I think they used him as kind of like the wild card. Like, okay, you waited around 2.5 hours. Now we're going to bring out Ernie Banks. And that was just like, oh my God, it's so worth it that we waited this right, long for the show to start again. You know,
just wait and wait.
That
and
was
wait.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, man. This segment of The Score is being brought to you by Presence Health. The school year is almost here, and it's time for your child's yearly physical. Presence Health offers plenty of locations near you. Visit presencehealth.org/docs to schedule an appointment today. Lawrence, we like to do drafts on this show and have for a long time. And I know you've been here for some of them, right?
Yeah, we've done like a cereal draft before. We've done a cookie draft before together.
Uh-huh. And there have been a couple music drafts through the years. One time we did a Zeppelin song draft with Dan McNeil, which was really fun, up until Nick Shepkowski picked Echoes, which is a Pink Floyd song.
Yeah.
in the middle of a Zeppelin draft.
Wow.
Dude took a Floyd song.
Okay.
But that's okay. But that's all right.
Did he immediately run to the I'm from Coal City excuse?
He didn't have to run there. It was,
hey, man.
It was.
On the third bong hit, they all start to blur together, you know?
Apparently so. No, but for Shep, I'm from Coal City is written in an LED screen that's right above his head entire time. But let's do a draft. We'll get back to Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game and stuff at the top of the hour. But let's do a draft. And we were thinking about one, because what came up yesterday with you and me, it always does.
We were talking about Paul's Boutique.
Versus Check Your Head. Right?
Ooh.
I always like to have that conversation. And then we started thinking, all right, what is the best, what are the best rap albums of all time? The best hip-hop rap albums of all time. And Lawrence and I could be in a draft like that. You could be in a draft like that.
Yeah.
And Chris Tannehill from The Afternoon Show is a serious hip-hop head and DJ, and he's going to play along with us as well.
That's awesome.
So,
I mean, there's so many years of great hip-hop. I mean, I still got like Houdini 12 inches from like 1980.
Can I just tell you that I heard One Love on Backspin the other day, and it just like at the beginning when they're spelling it out, it makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of stuff from the 80s that in hip-hop that's just like, you know what? This is all right. Like, everything's okay. And then folks turned a little bit more serious and things went sideways and stuff.
Grandmaster Flash and Molly Mell sort of spoiled it for everybody. It's like, okay, the party's over, guys.
Right.
Exactly.
by the way, some incredible text coming in here. AC/DC show would be every batter hitting a home run. That's the same song. Here's a home run and another home run and another home run. That's right. A great set list is old school. The leadoff guy bunt single, you move him over, the mashers mash, and then the grand slam comes
there
through.
There you go. Yeah.
Right there. That's a set list right there. But anyway, so let's do a draft. The three of us and Tanny, and I think Jay Zawoski. No,
he doesn't like
he's
music.
Out. All right, so it's the four of us. We're each going to pick some.
How many rounds are we going?
I was going to say four, but maybe five now.
All right, good. Because I was sitting there looking at my draft board last night, and there's some that I might have to jump. Go off the board a little bit.
All right, well, let's get there. We'll do it next. And back to the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game at the top of the hour. It's 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We got a half a dozen players here. We got tons of players on pins and needles all around America on this, the opening gavel of the 2005 and the 70th annual National Football League selection meeting, commonly known as the draft.
All right, the draft is on.
Big time party.
It's the score, and yeah, we are a sports station, but you know we're a culture station. We're a men 25 to 54 station, and we've been talking a lot of sports and music corollary, and it's a sports thing to do a draft, but we're going to make it about music. We have me, Matt Spiegel. We have Lawrence Holmes. We have Chris Tannehill.
How we doing?
The fine producer of the afternoon show, and we have Greg Kot, the rock critic for the Chicago Tribune.
Now, a texter wants to clarify this, and I think it's a good clarification to make before we make our picks.
Yeah.
Is this a draft of your personal favorites or albums that you think are the best?
Well, I think it's up to each person.
Okay.
Right?
For me, it's going to be personal favorites. I mean, you know, to put the weight of like all-time best on anything.
Right. Like you're supposed to choose.
Really picking what you think is the best.
Yeah. Like you're supposed to choose something that is undoubtedly the most influential if you don't necessarily love it.
Right. Stuff that influenced your life as a fan is a good way to go about it. Like, you know, I have a very specific lane that I'm going to be going for, but also try to incorporate some of the greatest records of all time as well. So try to balance it out as best you can, I suppose.
Okay.
I want to steal some of Tanny's. I think I got an idea of where I could go.
I try to survey the room a little bit. It's like, oh, what can I get? What are my good value picks here?
Well, I mean, all right. So I'm going to go first because I'm the least qualified to participate in this draft. In discussions during the break, I think Lawrence, you can go second. Tanny, who knows a lot, goes third. But it was a tight one. But we're going to let the rock critic for the Chicago Tribune go fourth. and I'll go first, and I will take Dr. Dre's "The Chronic" as my number one overall.
Good choice, guy. Good choice. Good choice. that's what I am in the fantasy draft at this score. So good pick.
I mean, I certainly influential, controlled and tamed Snoop in that way, and also just hit after hit after hit that's catchy as hell. And I feel like, you know, defined that particular realm of the genre for a long time. So that's my pick for number one overall.
Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers for me.
That's a good pick.
That album,
I like that.
And you realize that they got nine guys in a group that can all rap.
Mm-hmm.
The beats were something that we had never really heard before. They put a whole mythology behind who they were as a group, as they're announcing who they are as a group. Just a different sound. Loved it.
Incredible pick. That's also the blueprint for what you hear early Kanye stuff with soul beats and stuff like that. It's all right there for you.
Wow, look at that. See, Tanny with the context.
Tanny is a genius.
All right, Tanny, you're up. What's your first pick in round one?
I'm going, could be possibly the most perfect hip-hop album of all time, Nas Illmatic.
Yeah, it's number one on most of the lists out there.
Yeah, it would be my list as well. I was going to possibly go Wu-Tang, but that's why I had Illmatic right there. To me, you can interchange the two of them, both different styles and, you know, trajectory of careers and things like that, and different significance, but that, to me, it's the perfect album.
All right, Mr. Greg.
Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet.
Damn it.
And I could almost pick any early Public Enemy record. I picked that one because that's probably the one. And I'm strictly picking records that I've listened to the most and love the most. I'm not going to go for historical. And I know that the Public Enemy has a lot of historical value, but I just love this record. To me, it hit that sweet spot between erudite, smart. The lyrics by Chuck D are amazing in terms of addressing social issues, but also just the hardness of the beats. I mean, it was just a
heavy,
brutal,
heavy,
in-your-face record, and I love that.
Okay.
You know, the corollary between that and punk rock was just amazing.
Good stuff. All right, well, you know what? I'll take the better Public Enemy record. I'll take It Takes a Nation of Villains.
Wow.
See, I had this debate, too, when I was making my list, and I think I would side with Greg, that one. Yeah,
I feel very good about...
I can't be mad at you about that, either.
I feel very good about It Takes a Nation of Millions to hold us back in the second round.
Yeah.
Lawrence, your second round pick.
Outkast, Stankonia. Hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
Another sonically changing album. And it was, I feel like for them, it was the album where, it was the album after people in the hip hop community went, oh, we know what they are. And they kind of brought it out to the world. And it was just a huge album. It's a fun album. And it has a lot of slice of life of Atlanta in it. So I'll go with Stankonia as my second pick.
Now, here's where the strategy comes in a little bit. I'm going to jump my rankings here a little bit to get something that I really want. And I'm going to go with Common Sense's Resurrection. Because I looked at Lawrence and I'm like, oh, he might grab that one. And it's such an important album. Like, it put Chicago hip-hop on the map, solidified Chicago hip-hop with, of course, early No ID and Common. It's just, it's a great album, one of my favorites, and definitely a formative album, things I listened to when I was growing up. So.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a great choice. I love both of those last two choices a lot. Kendrick Lamar, To Pimp a Butterfly.
You know, is that going to be the most recent one that gets taken? It's pretty genius.
I just think that record is going to be listened to 20 years from now, and it's just going to get better. I mean, I love the fact that the way he brought in the sampling, but also the musicians. I mean, Kamasi Washington, Flying Lotus, Thundercat. These are heavy dudes playing on this record. It's a jazz record. It's a gospel record. It's a soul record. It's a rock record. With the best lyricist in working in hip hop today, I think right now on that record.
All right, so we are through two rounds. We go to round three. I've got the first pick. This may be a reach for some, but whatever. It's what we love, right? And this combining rap and the R&B with so much soul, lots of singing, but lots of rap too. I want The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
It was on my draft board.
So many tracks still resonate for me from every ghetto, every city. And suburban place, I live everything on that record. So I'll take Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
I will take The College Dropout by Kanye West.
Good pick.
That album, that album means a lot. Production-wise, I don't think it's his best work, but I felt like it was important because it gave a different perspective on hip hop. It gave hip hop to a lot of people who maybe felt like they didn't fit into the culture. He kind of made his own lane with that album. It's a beautifully written album too, because it's so personal and very relatable. And I think with Kanye, once you get past Graduation, his albums become less relatable.
Mm-hmm.
But College Dropout is extremely relatable for whoever you are.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm going to go with, it's not their best album, but it's my favorite album, and I think it's one of the greatest hip-hop albums of all time, Gangstar's Hard to Earn. Lawrence, I could not do this without getting that. To me, it's Primo entering his prime, it's Guru at his best, and it kind of laid the groundwork for what New York East Coast hip-hop was going to sound like for the next decade. So I think it's a very important album, Gangstar's Hard to Earn.
Well, you guys just took two more off my list, so that's good. I appreciate all the hard work you're doing on this. I'm going to go with Clips.
Ooh,
Hell Hath
nice.
No Fury.
Nice.
Iceberg Slim, man. This is they're channeling. I mean, the level of detail in these rhymes about essentially one subject. I mean, these guys are talking about the coke trade in Virginia, and it's like holy mackerel. I mean, I knew nothing about what's going on there, but I feel like they painted a movie in this record, and they're so hard. The beats are so sparse, Neptune's production. I love the fact that it's a producer working with a rap duo. And
it's early Pharrell Williams with Neptune.
Pusha T and Malice. I mean, I wish they would work together again, because I think they were just magical in a sort of a hard vein.
All right, last round here of the draft, and then we can sign some undrafted free agents. My final pick, I'll take Low End Theory from Tribe Called Quest. The creativity, the dreamy lyrics, the accessibility, and the jazz. It's jazz. It's brought in there, and it just that's going to make it timeless for me, is the jazz influence.
It breaks my heart that I have to I have so many more that I want to draft, and I'll look for free agents. But I'm actually going to take another Tribe Called Quest album.
Midnight Marauders?
No, even though Tanny and I both love Midnight Marauders.
One.
Yes. Thank you for your service. Wow. We'll take
the
it from
one.
Here.
Nice.
It's so good. It's so complete. It's the happiest I've heard Busta Rhymes in 12 years on records. Consequence steps up as an MC. The guest on there, when they bring in Andre 3000, they bring in Kendrick Lamar. Jack White plays guitar on three of the tracks. It is a perfect album.
All right. Final two picks of the draft. Tanny.
Oh, boy. This is a really tough one, because I really wanted to go the infamous Mobb Deep on this one, especially with everything that's happened recently. But there wouldn't be infamous Mobb Deep without BDP's Criminal Minded.
Okay.
And that's where I'm going. Criminal Minded, because this is NWA before NWA, KRS-One, who I consider the greatest of all time, their debut album. So I got to go Criminal Minded on that one. It's kind of,
All right, and rap album irrelevant for you, Mr. Cott.
KRS-One thinks he's the greatest of all time, too.
Ask him. Yeah.
Right now. He will battle rap
right
you
now.
In the grocery store.
He will go
right
with,
now.
Go to
yes.
Anybody. I'm going to some people may consider this an out-of-left-field pick, too, but I love this record, and I always have, and I was reminded again the other night, because Del the Folk, Funky, and Homo Sapien appeared on stage with Gorillaz.
The Gorillaz.
The Deltron 3030 self-titled record from 2000. Dan the Automator, Del the Funky, Homo Sapien, Kid Koala on Turntable Scratching. Amazing, sonic, psychedelic
wow.
journey. Album length. It's like another movie on record.
All right, there it is. The draft is done. I have Dr. Dre's The Chronic, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, and Low End Theory. Lawrence, what's your team?
Enter the Wu-Tang by Wu-Tang Clan, Stankonia by Outkast, College Dropout by Kanye, and We'll Take It From Here by A Tribe Called Quest.
And what you got, Tim?
I don't have a pen in here. I need a pen or internet. So yeah. I think I had Illmatic, Common's Resurrection, Gangstar, Hard to Earn, BDP, Criminal Minded, and what was the other one I had here? What did I have? I don't.
I think that's.
There's
think
only
that's
four.
It. There's only four.
Yeah
that's it.
Mr. Cott.
I had Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet, Kendrick Lamar, To Pimp a Butterfly, Clips, Hell Hath No Fury, and Deltron 3030, self-titled.
See, I'd like to sign as free agents. Commons B. I would like to sign The Ecstatic by Mos Def,
that's
which
it.
Is a gorgeous
you get
album.
Two. I will sign Check Your Head, and I will sign Mad Villainy from MF Doom and Madlib, because I love that record.
Good call. I had an MF Doom album on my list as well, but I'm not signing MF Doom. I'm signing Mobb Deep, the infamous Mobb Deep, and I'm also signing Company Flow, Fun Crusher Plus.
Oh, love that. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a good
Thank
choice.
You.
Greg, you got two quick signs.
Good choice. I'm going to go with Killer Mike Rap Music.
Love it.
2012 record with the collaboration with LP that started the whole Run the Jewels thing. And I'm going to go with Missy Elliott, Under Construction.
Ah,
nicely done.
Timbaland, Missy Elliott.
And I'll tell you who's mad right now. Run DMC is like, I'm
raising
hell.
Raising hell was on my draft
board. It's on my draft list, too. But
sorry, Run DMC. Sorry, Cool G Rap.
Sorry, LL Cool J.
Apologies, Jay-Z.
I've had arguments with people contending that Raising Hell has got the best four. It's got the best side one of any rap album from the 80s.
All right, we're out of time. This was great fun. Greg, thanks for coming in, man.
Hey, this is a blast. Let's do some more.
I like it. Soundopinions.org is where you can find his talk show. Tanny, go back to work on the afternoon show.
I will.
But thank you, sir, very much
thank
for doing
it. Thank you guys for
having me. And that's Lawrence Holmes. I'm Spiegs. We'll do some Home Run Derby and some All-Star Game in our final hour here on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.